Good day, South Dakota, and welcome to Tech Radio featuring the Computer Guys. I'm your host, Ken Osborne. On today's program, we'll discuss the latest in tech news. We'll chat about the recent Detroit Auto Show, changes to the Windows 10 upgrade program, and tax season will be upon us soon. Is this the year you do it yourself? Is that online? Plus, your calls, texts, emails, and Facebook posts. We'd love to hear from you. Send those questions via email to midday@sdpb.org or send a tweet to @sdpb. Join the discussion on our Facebook page at facebook.com/techradio or call now 800-524-3604. You can email your suggestions or questions to our guests today, Joel Brovelite or Jeff Litterick. That email address again is midday@sdpb.org. We'll hear from the panelists and you after this news from SDPB Radio. And welcome back to Tech Radio featuring the Computer Guys. We've gathered the experts to talk tech today and answer questions you might have for us. In the studios of KCSD in Sioux Falls, Matt Guru, Joel Brovelite joins us. Hey, Joel.
Good afternoon.
And from the wonderful city of Pierce, South Dakota, and the Bureau of Information and Telecommunications therein, Jeff Litterick joins us. Hello, Jeff.
Hello, all.
Good day, sir. I imagine your city has been flooded with legislators now.
Yeah, trying to find a seat at a restaurant or just, you know, parking spot in a lot of places is really, really hard. And then when it gets really cold this weekend, they'll all be gone. But it'd be too cold to actually go out and enjoy it. So
I imagine. Much of the state's going to be plunged into some rather cold weather this weekend. So good day to curl up with your e-book or maybe watch a movie on Netflix.
Yeah, or play a really graphic intensive game so you can warm up to the chip on your tablet.
You know? I was gonna say Netflix. They're talking about cutting off the folks that use VPNs, figuring out an algorithm or doing whatever to block that coming up here. People are trying to get around the region blocking of certain codes and things and country codes. So, kind of interesting news out of Netflix recently.
Yeah, go ahead, Jeff.
It's even more interesting because a lot of, at least in the United States, VPN users were using these VPNs and proxies to avoid their ISP that may have bad connections to Netflix to get better quality for Netflix. But Netflix also has legal things it has to agree to because certain movies and certain shows are not available in certain countries. So,
right.
It's for the region blocking, but it hurts all the people who are using it to get around bad connections to Netflix with their ISP, which was improving their Netflix experience. So, you know, it's 50% this way, 50% that way.
So wait a minute here. With my VPN, I've got a choice of, you know, basically what server I want to connect through. Some of those are in the United States, like Seattle or Atlanta or out on the East Coast. So even the ones, even if I specify a U.S. server, I'm the chances are I'm not going to be able to use that?
Yes, because it's the people in the U.K. that would specify the U.S. server to be able to see shows that are available in the United States and not available in the U.K., for example.
Oh, so they don't know where I'm from.
They have to do it for all.
Or vice versa. You know, there are cases where there are shows that Netflix has streaming rights to, say, in the UK, that they don't have streaming rights to in the United States. So there's lots of that. And there are places where Netflix is not available. However, using a VPN would allow you to use that. There are several countries that I can think of offhand in the Middle East and in Asia that Netflix is not available but is widely used through VPN.
And
we should probably say what VPN is to people that aren't listening.
Absolutely.
They don't know what we're talking about. VPN it's an acronym, like so many on this show, that stands for Virtual Private Network. And what it does is it kind of gives you, not kind of, it gives you a way to have the content provider, whether that's Netflix or this website or that website or whatever, think that you're at one location when you're at maybe another location. So it could give you could use the VPN to say you're in Canada when you're actually in the United States.
That is one of the uses of VPN.
Of course. That's actually not the – that is one of the uses of VPN. That's the use I've used.
Right.
The real use,
so
of course, is
– for Kent, The reason I have a VPN is I am quite often mobile. I rely on the kindness of others to have Wi-Fi hotspots in the restaurants and bars and coffee houses and other places and Taco John's and wherever that I'm at. And when I am at those places using the free unencrypted Wi-Fi and I want to transact business or even keep what I'm doing private from the sniffing of other people, I tunnel, basically I have this encrypted tunnel to a server, and that is a direct line, and nobody can listen in on me
probably
doing my thing.
Likely.
It's more, I'm far safer
yes.
using a VPN and a
no
public
question.
Wi-Fi
no question.
Than I am not.
And of course, you know, going back even further, the real reason VPNs were invented were so corporate people and scientists could use their network at their place of business, say IBM, for instance. You could have access to all the network resources at IBM, yet you might be somewhere else. That was actually the reason VPNs
yes,
were invented.
Securely, yes.
Yes, so that you could have access to files and data and whatever it is.
And people still do that.
Of course. That might be the number one use, frankly. Might be. Maybe.
let's not get into that. Yeah. You know. Okay, so.
We've overly described
I don't mean to get it off topic here, but the Tor network is something a little bit different. It's kind of the same, but a little bit different. I put a thing on Facebook yesterday. They released a graphic that shows the people that are anonymizing their web traffic, and it's beautiful. If you haven't seen it, it's animated, and it is absolutely the most beautiful thing. You bring it up full screen, and it's mesmerizing watching this traffic flow to Europe, and then just it gets white hot over there, and then it kind of comes back. It's just really cool. But anyway, a reason to go to our Facebook page may be that. So facebook.com/techradio, check out that amazing release from Tor yesterday, the Tor network. Again, similar but not exactly a VPN, and check that out. And also, you know, leave us a comment, like the page, do the thing, and we will appreciate that. We have Dennis calling from Martin. He's got a question about upgrading Windows 10 from Windows 7. Hello, Dennis.
Yes, hello. Thank you.
Hey, what's your question today?
Yes, I just upgraded to Windows 7. And I'm getting the notices already to upgrade to Windows 10. Now, I get along just fine with Windows 7. It gives me everything I need. But I was wondering, would there be security issues and support issues be reason enough to go to Windows 10?
Jeff, you want to take that?
Yeah, and this is a good question because I was going to talk about this today. The whole upgrade process is going to be changing here soon. No, not at this time. Each version of Windows has a life expectancy in which Microsoft will stop supplying support and patches. Windows 7 is not up for quite a few years yet, so Windows 7 will keep working just fine for the meantime, but it will sunset, just like XP did. It takes about 10 to 15 years. Microsoft will stop supplying patches, and at that time, you will be forced to upgrade. Now, one of the benefits of upgrading to Windows 10 is that Microsoft doesn't plan to, like, expire Windows 10. What will happen with Windows 10 is once you upgrade to it, instead of expiring like XP and Windows 7 will in the future, and you'd have to be forced to upgrade, it would be a continuous upgrade process where you never really, you know, get a Windows 11 or Windows 12. As long as you keep patching, which is enforced in Windows 10, you would just have the current operating system, and as it changes over time and gets better, there won't be any kind of sunset. So what happens is most people just buy new hardware, and you'll have your Windows 10, and it just continues without you having to do a big upgrade again. Now, if you want to stay on Windows 7 for a while, because I've talked to some people who've had problems with Windows 10 upgrades and stuff, in the long term, in a few years, you'd be forced to upgrade. But if you want to wait, there's actually a way to hide that icon and that notification. Out now, it's a registry setting. That's not too hard to do. And the reason I point that out is because Microsoft here later, either this month or early next month, is going to make that pop up even more often than it does already. They really want everyone to upgrade. So they are actually going to start enforcing the upgrade, and if you're not paying attention, it will start the upgrade process automatically without your clicking yes, and you will get those pop-ups at least twice a day going forward to upgrade. And I know they can get annoying. The nice thing is Microsoft has given instructions on how to hide that and also how to reactivate that in the future when you wish to upgrade. The only other caveat I'll point out is right now Windows 10 is a free upgrade. Microsoft only promised to keep the upgrade free for 1 year from release, so that will come up in July of this year. At what point, we don't know, but Microsoft may start charging for you to upgrade at that point. So if you are thinking about upgrading, you probably want to upgrade before that expires here in this July time frame of 2016, just to be on the safe side.
Okay. Thank you very much. This helps a lot.
You bet. Well, thanks, Dennis. Thank you. Appreciate the question.
Ken. And we'll post it's a kind of a detailed article with very detailed instructions on how to both activate and deactivate the Windows 10 upgrade process. We'll post that link up on our Facebook, the Tech Radio Facebook page, so that you can go and read it. So,
okay, thank you guys very much.
You bet. Jeff, did you get taken care of the business you needed to transact there in Windows 10 then, the whole nagging part and how to shut it off, or do you got a little bit more on that?
Yeah, there's a little bit more, and this mainly affects business people. Up to this point, Windows machines that have joined a domain and stuff are not, don't get this icon and stuff. That will change. Microsoft is very aggressive now in wanting to upgrade everybody's Windows 10. Now, if you are a business and you do have an AD and a domain, you can use the same policies to block these messages from your users and to block the upgrade. But as time goes by and we get closer to July, this is going to become more and more frequent where you get these pop-ups, and Microsoft's going to start kind of wanting to get you to upgrade to the point where if you just click Windows Update automatically at night, it may upgrade to Windows 10 automatically without even telling you. So especially if you're a business and maybe you have a couple machines at roam and are not on the domain, you might want to look into this to make sure you block this notification. If you're not ready to move to Windows 10, you have some applications that you use for the business that are not ready yet. It's kind of important because this is going to get more and more aggressive. Starting here soon, it will be twice a day that it will prompt you. One other thing to keep in mind on this kind of front is you do want to keep the updates going, though, so don't turn off Windows Update to block the update, because as of this month, Internet Explorer 6, 7, 8, and 9, and 10 are no longer supported and will no longer have security updates. The only version of Internet Explorer that is supported going forward is IE 11, and this impacts a lot of businesses too. They may have old apps that are incompatible, but there are no more security patches, and Microsoft is even thinking about a kill switch for consumers where it would disable any version of IE below 11 off your machine. So that's another big change coming up this month with Microsoft. Basically, only one version of IE is supported at this point, and if you have older versions and there's security issues, you're kind of on your own. So I wanted to get that out too.
Great tip to have. And, of course, those that are using alternative browsers, continue to do your updates as well. Jeff, are there a lot of is Windows 10 in your consideration, is it ready for prime time? I mean, are there still a bunch of big programs hanging out there that haven't really been made compatible yet, or are we mostly there?
For all your main stuff, commercial programs, yes, it's pretty much good to go. The main issues I've been seeing is sometimes the update still needs to be rolled back because it still has hardware problems. But that's more unique to, you know, individual PCs. Some people do not like the new interface and roll it back and want to roll it back. And after you upgrade to Windows 10, I should point out that you can, for at least 30 days, roll back to your current version of Windows, be it 8 or 7. There is a rollback mechanism, but it eats up a lot of disk space. So after 30 days, that can disappear, or you can take out the option to recover your disk space, at which point you can no longer go back to Windows 7. But most of the apps, what we're getting to is business applications, ones that are customly designed and written. And some of them still require older versions of IE, at which Windows 10 doesn't support at all, which means the applications are not going to work. So it's more of the custom app and older apps. If you're writing some program that was written in 2000 and stuff, and the company went out of business and hasn't updated it, you find that in some specialized niches, like very specialized photo editing or video editing, stuff like that, if you're running an old program that the company went out of business with. Otherwise, you're pretty much good to go.
All right. I want to explore one more thing before we go to break, and that is you mentioned some people are not happy with the Windows 10 user interface or UI. You don't mean to say that people like the kind of tile thing from Windows 8, do you?
The people that complain to me are the Windows 7 users.
Oh, okay.
They think that, especially with the search and stuff, it's just a little bit too busy, the new interface, and a little bit harder to find stuff. But you get that in every cycle, and a lot of it's just a matter of getting used to it and learning and taking the time to explore the interface and find all these shortcuts and stuff that used to be there with keyboard commands and stuff that people would get around. But people have to realize it's a time investment. The second you upgrade doesn't mean you're going to be running just as fast as you used to. It's going to take some time and a little bit of effort on your part to learn the new interface.
Very good. We do need to stop and pause and take a break here. When we come back, I know we want to talk about Detroit Auto Show and some things having to do with filing your taxes online, but we'll take care of that business after this quick break. And welcome back to Tech Radio featuring the Computer Guys on this clear and cool January. A couple ways to reach out to the show we want to remind you of. Our phone number, 800-524-3604. That's 800-524-3604 at SDPB. Our Twitter handle and email is at midday@sdpb.org. Our Facebook page, facebook.com/techradio. Out there you'll also find an interesting thing, Joel, about Apple possibly getting rid of the headphone jack on the next iPhone.
Yeah, that's a rumor that, strangely, I've been asked a lot about lately. So the rumor is, and it's just rumor, that Apple, on the next revision of the iPhone, which probably we won't see until fall, and may be announced in the summer, but may not, will not have a headphone jack. A standard, you know, eighth inch stereo mini jack. Although it's a bit more than that, it's also digital. I think the reason people are talking about it is because it makes so much sense. And let me tell you why I think it makes so much sense. Number one, and this is totally based in reality, it is the thickest part of the phone. Like, that component inside the phone is by far the thickest part. So if you want to go any thinner, you're going to have to get rid of that. And all phone manufacturers have that issue. Apple has been known for years to eliminate ports before anybody else will.
Absolutely.
So one advantage I can see to this, I can go through several. The first one is it's an entrance point that you really can't control for water and moisture. And it's relatively useless in today's market. With Bluetooth being very pervasive, people use Bluetooth headsets all the time. If you want to hook it up to your car, more and more cars will sync with your device via Bluetooth. And there are ways around that. If for instance, you want to use a regular headset and you don't have a headphone jack on this device, Apple has the Lightning port that's on the bottom. It would be nothing for Apple to make an adapter that you would just plug it in and you'd plug it into your existing headphones and away you go. Now, I can hear people already saying, well, that means I got to buy another thing just to use the stuff that I have.
More accessories.
Because we've never done that before.
Right.
But again, it'd get down to one port on the device, one point of entry. You don't have to worry about breaking the motherboard if something snaps off inside because you have it two things plugged in. It seems like a great idea to me.
Why don't you just get rid of the port, the plug-in port too, and just have it set it on the mat to charge the phone?
Because that does way more than just charge the phone.
Right.
Of course, it's your only. I don't see a point yet where a device will have no point of entry for terrestrial data. So if you need to plug the phone in, whether it's for charging or to reset the phone or to do a hard reset or to move photos off of, I don't think we're there yet to a completely autonomous device. I think that probably will come sometime, but I don't think yet. And Apple's, you know, for all the complaints I heard about when Apple went from the 50-pin, the wide connector from the iPhone 4 series to the Lightning connector that's basically on all the devices now.
Mm-hmm.
We heard lots of complaints about that.
Yeah.
I have to buy new. I haven't heard any complaints since because, of course, if you've ever tried to plug your device in at 1:32 a.m. and you have to figure out which side is which and you're flipping it upside down, the Lightning port is much, much better for that. You just plug it in. It doesn't matter what the orientation is. And it's a very firm, very connected connection.
I will say it is easier to use.
Yes. So and the same thing would go. I mean, obviously, audio cables are easy to plug into a device.
Yep.
But considering how easy it would be to make an adapter and how few people would really need that adapter, it seems like and the fact that they can get it thinner, it's one less component to solder onto that super small motherboard, if you can even call it a motherboard anymore. It just makes a lot of sense, frankly.
As I transition from my house, listening to either my SDPB app on my phone or something else from my Bluetooth speakers in the living room, and I walk out to my truck and I start the truck and it syncs up, and I just continue the listening experience with the Bluetooth, I'm not having to fish in
and plug in
a thing. And I'm thinking, you know, I probably wouldn't miss that.
Yeah, or, you know, say, for instance, here's a great example of something that I actually know happened. A buddy of mine, this is a couple of years ago, was doing just what you said. He had his phone playing in on the computer, but he had it plugged in with a audio jack, unplugs it, takes it out to his car, plugs it in. It works for a second, and then it shorts the entire device out and busts because it was actually sitting in a little pool of Coca-Cola at the bottom of the cup holder where the tip of the audio jack was just sitting because it was permanently kind of plugged into his car.
Sure.
His truck.
Yep.
So and that basically was enough to ruin the device, and he was out of device. This wouldn't happen in that case.
I take your point. And your phone stays snuggled right in your pocket where it should be. When you're driving, it should be in your pocket, people, or in your purse or wherever, but not in your hand.
Right, of course. But, I mean, in that case, you know, he had planned to just listen to the music on it. But this would take care of that as well. So, and again, it's just a rumor, although I would give this one a high likelihood. It may be not on the next phone, but on the next series of devices, it just seems like something.
I didn't
Apple
consider
would do.
The thickness of that jack in the design.
Well,
of the
if
phone,
you look at any
right.
look at any device that you've got, the headphone jack, it doesn't seem like that's a really thick port.
Yeah.
But compared to everything else, it's getting there.
Hey, we seem to have touched a nerve on the Windows 10 upgrade thing here. Cal from Mitchell has a question. You're upgrading from Vista, Cal?
Yes, I have Vista now, and would you comment on upgrading from Vista to Windows 10? If I can do it, and should I do it? I'll take
sure.
the answer off.
Sure.
Thank you.
Oh, thanks, Cal. Jeff, is there a tool that Cal needs to run on this computer to make sure that everything's going to be okie dokie, or is he good to go?
Well, the first thing is I'm not sure there's a free upgrade path from Vista to 10. There is for 7 and 8. I'll check it out here and probably get back to you if it's free or not. You may have
sure.
to go actually buy Windows 10 in order to be able to upgrade to it because this is not a direct upgrade path. As for upgrading, yes, if you are still running Windows Vista, you do need to upgrade it. It's end of life, and it's for at least to Windows 7. Though you can't really buy Windows 7 right now anymore because of Windows 10, but yes, you do need to upgrade. Vista is probably one of the most unstable Microsoft operating system that's been out and since 2000, really. I would not recommend anyone run Vista at this point. So, but I'll take a quick look and get back to you on the upgrade path.
Is that something that if he found a boxed version or an OEM or something that he could upgrade to 7, and then would the upgrade be free to 10?
Yes. If you could upgrade to Windows 8.1, or 7, then the upgrade from any of those is for free to Windows 10. So
something to keep in mind.
Right. The only upgrade path I know right now of Vista is to Windows 7, a direct upgrade without a full reinstall. And what they want to point out is right now if you go to Windows 10, it will be a reinstall, which means you have to reinstall all your applications and stuff. It won't be a more seamless upgrade like you could get from Windows 7 to 10 where you just install it, everything's still there, all your applications are running. You do need to do probably a little bit more stuff. So, and I am seeing at this point there is, from everything I'm seeing, there is no free upgrade from Vista. You basically probably have to upgrade to Windows 8.1 and then upgrade to 10 if you are to actually do an upgrade process for versus a full reinstall.
Okay, but to be clear, it was a really strong recommendation from you or from the show that if you're using that Vista machine to touch the internet or do business or do anything else, it really needs to get upgraded.
Right. Yeah. Vista. Well, technically, may still be on this front. I even have to look at that. It may not be. If it is, it got taken off in the past year or so. Was really never really all that highly recommended by anybody. As soon as Windows 7 came out, everyone upgraded to Windows 7 as fast as they could. Windows 7 is basically Vista the way Vista should have been, not the way it came out. So even Microsoft stopped supporting with Service Pack Vista almost immediately and recommended everyone go to Windows 7. Windows 7 ran faster on the same hardware than Vista and was more stable. So,
yeah, hopefully, like I said, Cal can at least find an upgrade to 7 at a reasonable price or free somewhere and get that taken care of, because 7 is a much better experience as well. But again, thanks for the call, Cal. We appreciate that and hearing from our folks in the Corn Palace City there. 800-524-3604 is the number to call. Our Facebook page, facebook.com/techradio. We would love you to like us there. And, of course, you can email your calls or your questions or suggestions to us, to our guest today, Joel Brovelite, here at KCSD in Sioux Falls, and Jeff Litterick in Pier. The email address, midday@sdpb.org, if you would like to do that as well. Any other Apple news we need to touch on before we get rid of that? Yeah, Jeff.
Yeah, I'll just inject just for a call on the Windows 10. If you do want to just upgrade directly to Windows 10, a copy of the home retail will cost about $120. Well, Windows 10 Pro, if you want to go to the professional version, will cost $200. That's the only supported upgrade path. OEM, you have to actually buy new hardware if you get a OEM license. I guess I didn't really know the pricing because it was free for most people. That's been at least Windows 7, but those are the pricing prices if you want to upgrade.
So perhaps taking your tax return this year and doing a little investing into your machine or your software would be a good way to do that.
And any machine
getting a nod
that can,
from Joel.
Yeah.
And
totally.
Any machine that can run Windows 7, which is almost every machine that can run Vista, can also run Windows 10. So system requirement-wise, you should be good. It's just a matter of if you had upgraded from Vista to 7 or 8 when it was free, that's no longer free also. You had just been able to keep going for free, but unfortunately the time has expired on that. So,
yeah, what's not expiring is tax season is coming up. That opens January 19th, and there's a whole bunch of tax returns expected to be filed online this year. I didn't realize this until I read the other day that 4 out of 5, I believe, let me go ahead and find my notes here for today, people do the electronic filing already. And I didn't realize that it would be that high.
I'm kind of surprised it's only that high. You know, I mean,
More than 4 out of 5 returns are expected to be filed electronically. And then a similar proportion, you know, refunds issued through direct deposit, which, boy, that's a big number.
Yeah,
be honest,
it's very easy, so
yeah,
I'm not surprised.
I've been doing it for a few years, and if you have basic needs, it's free. There are free versions on the web that you don't pay anything for, unless you need if you're doing very basic taxes. If you need more, you have to pay a little bit more. But the nice part about doing it online, if you keep the same company, is it keeps all your tax information. It just rolls it in. So I just have to enter a few numbers off my updated forms each year, as long as there's been no major change, and it's literally done in 10, 15 minutes total.
Sure. Starting today, that's January 15th, it's Friday, the IRS's free file program is available. So if you may have an income, a household income of $62,000 or less, they will actually kind of forward you to a commercial piece of software. You can get your choice, and that filing is free. Over $62,000 a year, they have some PDFs available. You fill them out online. And then I'm not sure what you do with them, if you print them or you do whatever. But that program isn't open yet, so I couldn't click in there and get more information.
Yeah, maybe what we can
that.
Do is do a show on this since, nobody's going to do their taxes before we meet next time.
February 5th, by the way.
Yeah, I'm sure that there are. And the people that do the taxes before we talk the next time probably don't need help.
Yeah,
I'm just guessing.
Exactly. So 70% of the nation's taxpayers are eligible for the IRS free file, by the way.
That's a good deal.
One thing to keep in mind is even if you're not eligible for free file or you need more complex stuff, more like self-employment forms and stuff, from the stuff I've been doing, it's not that expensive if you do it online. It's much more expensive to go buy a program versus paying $20 online to get the exact same program through a web base. So even if you're looking at a program like TurboTax and stuff, it's usually cheaper to go online than buy a computer program to do it.
Yep. They are warning this year, new anti-fraud requirements are going into effect. When you sign into your tax software account, be prepared for that. That's there to better protect your tax software account and your personal information. So be ready for a few changes as you go to sign in this year to do what Jeff just said.
And I'll also point this out that if you've never done this before through electronic filing, the IRS, and you only need to do this once as long as you keep it, you actually go before you finalize your online form to the IRS website, which will actually create a uniquely generated PIN for you, a user ID that is to secure you, and then you will have to use that on your filing program on their site. So you will have to go to the IRS, and the online sites will direct you through this process to actually create a unique identifier based off old tax information. So you do need, if you've never done this before, a copy of some old tax forms and stuff ready so that you can generate that unique secure ID that will be part of your filing. And then you can, at least in the past, you've been be able to reuse that from year to year once it's been generated the first time.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And if you've ever filled out a form with the government for the FAFSA, the free information about getting student loans and stuff, you're familiar with that PIN. So be prepared for that. We need to take another quick break. The show is going quickly today, and we appreciate the calls and the emails. We come back from this break, we're going to talk a little bit about the Detroit Auto Show and some tech there. Also, a quick shout out, Wikipedia, or the Wiki company, turns 15 today. That's an interesting thing that we may want to talk about as well. But happy birthday, Wiki, and we'll be right back after this. And welcome back to this January edition of Tech Radio featuring the Computer Guys. As we alluded to earlier, our next show, February 5th. Our shows in February are on the 5th and the 19th, so we're back to two next month, and please join us. I'll mark the date down. If you want to interact with us between now and those dates, facebook.com/techradio is, of course, the way to do that. A couple other pieces of housekeeping to take care of. Monday's Dakota Midday is a special program for Martin Luther King Day called The Power of Nonviolence, The Spirituality of Peacemaking. Please join SDPB Radio Monday at noon in the Dakota Midday slot for that that wonderful program. Coming up this afternoon, we have on Science Friday, the Masters of Grift are also the Masters of Psychology. Join Science Friday for a look at how con artists play on our subconscious biases. That's going to be really interesting. That's in the second hour coming up on Science Friday today on SDPB Radio. Just stay tuned for that really great great programming as well. We have a listener email in today. Ivor says, while you're talking about the auto show, perhaps include discussion about the plug-in hybrids and electric vehicles like the Chevy Bolt. And I heard exactly that was one of the things from the Detroit Auto Show that was one of the big hot debates of that. Is the Chevy Bolt a game changer? So General Motors electric car, which hit the showrooms, will hit the showrooms in late 2016, goes more than 200 miles under charge, costs about $30,000 after some tax incentives. Anyway, they sort of beat Tesla as to the market for mass market electric car. Of course, Tesla's been out for a while, but as far as mass market goes, they're going to actually be the first ones out there and or beating Tesla. The question is, are people going to buy this?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what you're quoting there for first to the market, because of course the
mass
Leaf,
market.
Yeah, well, there's the Nissan Leaf and the Civic. Electric, and of course, well, anyway, I'm not sure what you're quoting there, but there are several electric cars on the market, but certainly I think the most talked about is the Chevy Bolt. And they've kind of redesigned the under-the-hood stuff this year.
Okay.
So, yeah, basically, it was just as you said, more than 200 miles on the charge, which I think is double what it was, if I'm not mistaken. And I know Tesla is going to release their 3 series. I think it's got 3 series is what they're calling it, or just the 3, Model 3. I'm not I could be wrong about that, which is supposed to be $30,000 before incentives in that neighborhood. That's what he basically that's what he came out and said. The CEO of Tesla said is their aim is for $30,000 before incentives, and that incentive, depending on where you are, not in South Dakota, but depending on where you are, is up to $7,500. So that could make that a pretty inexpensive electric vehicle. And if they could actually, you know, ramp up production of such a vehicle, that could sell pretty well, especially considering how good the reviews of the S, the Model S are as far as safety and drivability. So, and I've seen some Tesla S's around town here now. I think I've seen at least 4 in Sioux Falls here. So we're starting to see more and more of them.
Excellent. And just your overall opinion, you think the Bolt and the Volt and all the Leafs and all that is going to resonate with a bunch of the car buyers in 17? 16, 17?
Well, you know, I think when the price gets to where people can actually afford them in their normal buying pattern, you know, if you're normally buying a car in $30,000 range, mm-hmm. I think you're the type of person that might look at, you know, an electric vehicle, especially if it meets all the needs. Now, one advantage I see if Tesla sticks to theirs is Tesla has charging stations that are available for free all throughout the country. There's one in Worthington, Minnesota. So on your way to Minneapolis, you can charge up and then go to Minneapolis, several places to charge there. So, you know, that problem that you might have with being able to go 300 miles, 350 miles, is not such a problem when you can stop and charge, do a quick charge for a half an hour, get a drink, and then go on your way. We'll see more and more of that. I know that a couple of years ago, people were pretty negative about electric vehicles. And to some extent, that's still true, especially, you know, the news today that the price of oil has dropped below $30 a barrel, which is super cheap. But there are other advantages with electric vehicles that I think appeal to people, especially millennials and younger. You have an electric vehicle, it makes no noise or very little noise. The place where the engine was is now a giant trunk, so you can store more in it. They're easier to maintain. You know, you're not burning fossil fuels, which is also important for a lot of people. So I think we'll see more and more of those. It remains to be seen whether they'll actually be a big part of the market for the next 10 years. But
so there's two more facets to this discussion. You were talking about millennials and other people and their buying habits. Mm-hmm. And one is, and I think it was Ford that announced, they're going to come up with, basically, because of ride sharing, yeah, they're going to do lease sharing. Mm-hmm. So they'll lease a vehicle to up to, I think, 5 or 6 different people to share that vehicle for ride sharing or for whatever purposes. People are starting to decide they don't need a dedicated vehicle to themselves, and I wonder if that isn't because of Uber and other ride share programs.
Oh yeah,
like
and mass transit is, you know, not so much here in South Dakota, but if you go to a lot of other cities, Minneapolis, light rail keeps going up over there. You know, you may have need for a car from time to time, but you probably, you know, if you're near mass transit or you work near where you are, mm-hmm, you know, you might just need it on the weekends or a couple nights a week to go to a rehearsal or a party or something like that. And lease sharing and ride sharing is perfect for that type of person. And I think it's very smart of Ford to get into that market before it's too late to get into that market.
So very, very smart
move, in my opinion.
Yeah, better to try and fail early than not
try
at all.
Yeah, for sure. I think more and more we're seeing car companies trying to act like technology companies. Some might argue that they've always been technology companies, but they've acted more like traditional car companies. And we're seeing them adopt stances like, just like you say, mm-hmm, if you get into that market and you experiment and you fail, at least you'll have all of that data and all of that experience. Whereas if you never get into that, you know, you might be, you know, one of the many car companies that we don't see around anymore because you weren't able to move with the what people needed.
Yeah. Here's the other big thing out of the Detroit Car Show for me, or the big discussion that I found exciting was there's different ideas about when self-driving cars are going to be here. And so Audi, the American president of Audi, suggested that self-driving cars that require no driver assistance are going to be decades away. Decades. So Toyota's CEO says they're going to be here by 2023, 2025. Of course, you just mentioned Elon Musk and Tesla said on a conference call on Sunday self-driving cars could hit the road in 2 to 3 years.
Yeah, well, and you know, and I think, you know, there's a lot to parse in those comments, and they're all to a certain extent true. You know, 20 to 30 years. First, I would be very skeptical of anything that came out of either Audi or VW, which, of course, are basically the same company. You know, it wasn't 5 years ago when they said that they have no plans and will never release an electric vehicle. Now you can buy electric Volkswagen Golfs right now. So
you heard the little kerfluffle about VW, didn't you?
Of course. Yeah, absolutely.
They told an NPR reporter that they didn't lie.
Oh, yeah.
And then they had to come back later and clarify.
That's a whole other deal. If anybody says, well, for sure this is going to happen, don't listen to them because they don't know what they're talking about, because we all know that nobody can predict the future. Jeff, you had something?
Yeah, I do, because the Federal Department of Transportation Secretary announced, because it's just not the technology itself, that they are going full speed ahead on totally automated vehicles and to change whatever regulations and requirements are needed to push it forward for them to work. So the Federal Department of Transportation is very bullish, going to push it, and whatever changes to regulations need to be made in order to help this move to driverless cars, they are planning to push through. So that's part half the battle. It's just all the regulations and stuff. So
Jeff is absolutely right. I would venture guess that's more than half the battle. There's software out there right now. There are cars. If you live in California, you've seen cars drive by you that don't have drivers. They have a passenger that's there to take over if it needs it. You've already seen that. There are cars that do this. the big deal is the liability and the regulation. That is probably, I'd say, probably more like 90% of the issue. 20 to 30 years seems like a ridiculous guess.
Yes.
Although I would guess that 20 to 30 years would be the time where we would see maybe mostly autonomous vehicles or all autonomous vehicles. I would believe that. But I would also believe Elon Musk's opinion that in 2 to 3 years, we will start to see some. And maybe not here in South Dakota, or maybe not, you know, in California. Maybe it'll be somewhere else. But we're going to see more and more of that because, frankly, it's safer.
Well, judging
that's
from my driving experiences coming into Sioux Falls this morning, the sooner it can get here,
the better.
The better.
Yes.
Because I was almost run off the road today, and I would appreciate that. So the Obama administration is set to put $4 billion towards self-driving cars in the next 10 years. So that's going to do nothing but help, and I think that's got to do with infrastructure.
Yeah, of course.
I don't know
yeah.
if there's little waypoints that have to be put in.
You know, there's
highways
no there's no one way. The advantage and disadvantage is no one way that a car, an autonomous vehicle, can sense the road and drive. But the advantage there is that roads are different everywhere. If you go to you drive a road in South Dakota, the signs and how things work are completely different than they are in New Jersey and completely different than they are in Canada. So all of these manufacturers that are creating software and sensors and how things work, they have to take all of those things into account. They can't just say, well, put this one thing in the road and put it everywhere and then we'll all use that. They're not going to do that because that would never work. So they have to look at it from a global perspective.
That's why it's very important with the federal DOT, because they will be able to produce standards for what needs to be in the road and for lines and paint and all that kind of stuff to enforce a standard across the United States for self-driving cars to be able to, you know, have the sensors and interact with the roads and environment in a standardized way across every place. But it's going to take a long time to get there.
Yeah, and what I could see in that 20-year range, as someone mentioned, what I could see is a completely autonomous car that would go pick somebody up and travel kind of a standard, well-marked route that would require no person to take over at any point. But maybe it goes slow. It's almost like light rail. That doesn't involve a rail or a conductor and is fully autonomous. I could see that popping up in Minneapolis or Chicago or L.A., you know, in the next 10 to 20 years. But vehicles that require, you know, we talked about this many times, require the user to be there and active and pay attention, yet still drive itself. Well, frankly, some of those are already on the road right now.
Mm-hmm. I think what you're going to see is a progression to the fully driverless in that you'll get more and more steering aids, more traffic aids, more autopilot kind of stuff where, especially on highways, you can just let it take over for times and you're just monitoring it. Also, automatic parking, automatic congestion control, like if you're in heavily congested traffic where it works with the other cars and stuff to figure out the best speed for everybody to be going so it's not stop and go. That kind of stuff is going to progress and be there long before the fully automated, that there's no steering wheel, there's nothing left for the user to do except get in and tell the car where to go.
That's one of the more interesting things I found of this whole thing, is the Google engineers and other people that are working on this are kind of having a side debate about, you know, the cars are locked down right now to follow the law, and they're finding out the cars that are getting into accidents are the, you know, if they allow some fudge room, they wouldn't be getting into accidents anymore. So it's an interesting debate going on. The music means we're out of time for today. Again, join us Monday for that special program, Martin Luther King Day, on a Martin Luther King Day called The Power of Nonviolence, The Spirituality of Peacemaking, coming up Monday on Dakota Midday. Thank you, Jeff and Joel, for joining us today, and thank you for your questions and calls. Have a great weekend, everybody.